The last week we started with a distributed shared memory, which basically allows interaction between processes which don't run actually at the same time. Therefore, we can use some asynchronous interaction between the involved processes, and also the lifetime of the processes might be different. And if you think back with RPC or RMI, or that means if we look at message-based interaction there, the processes have to have the same or have at least overlapping lifetimes. Here, the lifetime does not have to be overlapping. One example, which was an early introduction of distributed shared memory, was tuple space, which was invented in at Yale University, and it also involved the design of the Lindau language. And the tuple space was basically storing a set of tuples, therefore the name tuple space, and these tuples were typed fields. And if we look here at an example of it, here it looks similar like a Lisp representation, and the tuples basically had types. Here we had a type string, and here the value of the field. Here we have a type which is integer, and the value here is 3. And the memory, it's basically sharing tuples between all the involved processes accessing the tuple space. And this shared memory, as we will later see with tuple space implementation, can be centrally but can also be decentralized managed. The important aspects are what kind of operations do we have? And here we have more or less three major operations. One is out, and here that's a tuple then, basically a field of values. And out basically creates a new tuple. Here, if we look at in, that reads the tuple from the tuple space and removes it. And that in reads it and removes it, and read basically reads a tuple, but it remains it in the tuple space. And the point is here, when we look at in and read, these are synchronous operations, and in P and read P are asynchronous operations. And therefore, in that sense, if no tuple is available with in P and read P, then basically we get an error message. So here, no tuple available, then error message. And in the first case, if we look at in and read, here no tuple. I should have written it the other way around. No tuple available, then wait. And wait until a tuple becomes available. And now we can look at how is in and read actually done. And here we look at when we have an in, Basically, as a parameter of in, we provide, and it's also the same for read. Basically, in, and then we provide something like a template. And this template consists of something like this here, and on the first field, we have the term or the string order, and then we have question mark I, question mark J. What does that actually mean? And here, this is the template, and here, question mark I, question mark J. What does that actually mean? We look for a tuple which has in the first field the term or the string order. We look for a template which has in the second field an arbitrary value, but it has to be the data type of the variable, data type of variable I. Therefore, if that variable I has the data type integer, then basically we look for a tuple which has on the second field a value of which is of data type integer. And if the same thing is happens here, if the data type of J is real, then we look for a tuple which has on the third position in the third field a value which has a data type of real, and therefore in that sense, what we do with accessing, therefore it's called here associative. We don't look for a tuple according to the ID. I mean, here tuples have no ID. So here tuples have no ID with respect to access. Therefore, if you remember with object-oriented programming, you use object ID or you use the object name basically to identify the object you want to look at and you want to retrieve. Here, we don't really look at the ID of a tuple. We basically perform here pattern matching. I mean, it's pattern matching. We use pattern matching, and pattern matching is we look basically, if we provide this here, we look for a tuple which has three fields. In the first field, there must be the string order. In the second field, we are not constrained with the value, but we are constrained with the data type. And we look for the data for a value which has a data type of the string I, and of the variable I, and we use on the third field a data type with what the variable J has. And then these values are basically then assigned to the variables I and the variable J. And if we have several tuples which satisfy these constraints, basically the system takes an arbitrary one. And there's no real assumption that it would take the oldest one, or it would take the newest one, or it would take one with the highest priority or something like that. It takes basically an arbitrary one. Therefore, you can't really use that assumption. There is no assumption with respect of exchanging tuples. You can't say, well, you have something like first in, first out, or the push and pop, what you have from stacks. It takes an arbitrary one depending what it finds first. And this synchronous, I said, if no tuple is found, then it waits. And if no tuple ever shows up, it waits forever. And here with the asynchronous approach, basically, if it doesn't find one, then it comes back with an error message. And then the process can decide how it continues. And here we have this evaluate. And for people, I don't know, who knows Lisp programming, is there anybody? It's basically the same function what you have in Lisp to evaluate. Therefore, what you can do is here, you can provide a tuple which basically consists of programming code. And what happens is here, evaluate it, you generate or create a new process, and then you execute this program code. That means as you here, spawn new process, and execute T. And it's if you use a Lisp, then you would just take the Lisp code and then execute it. And that's the same thing as in Lisp. You have this eval where you can provide Lisp information and then execute it. And the most important part is you have this associative access of it. The tuple space implementation, there are three ways of implementing it. One is you have a central tuple space. It's in a central location, and then you write to that central location, or remove it. Certainly, tuple space becomes a bottleneck, because all the processes access the central location. You can have a replicated tuple space. Therefore, in that sense, each computer means a complete copy of the tuple space. And that's a rather, requires a rather high synchronization overhead. You have to certainly synchronize write operations. I mean, we call it out. You have to synchronize the out operation. But what comes further, you also have to synchronize the in operation. Because when we talked about the read operation, in what it does, it reads the tuple and removes it. And therefore what happens, you have to remove this tuple from all the replicas. And that means that not only the writing, but also the reading is a rather high synchronization effort. And because you have to remove it, and you have to remove it in a way that even you have certain time delay having sending information to all the different tuple spaces, you are not allowed that any other process in the meantime accesses the same tuple. And because you want to have only one access to that tuple. And therefore, the tendency is, if we want to have a distributed tuple space, well, we divide it up into subspaces. Each machine has its own part of the tuple space. it's not replicated. As we know, replication. And what happens here, the out operation is happens locally, and if we have an in or read, certainly you check locally. If there is a tuple available which matches the template, if not, then you propagate it, or you query remote sites. And therefore, what they usually would do is you have a multicast to all distributed sites. And therefore, in that sense, query if there is a tuple available, and then the one space which has one would basically answer. If we look at the implementation of a client-server implementation, that makes it rather simple. And first of all, let's look at the client. What happens is here, certainly you have the client ID. You have here a list of unspecified, therefore in that sense a parameter list where you have different data types in the tuples, and then you first collect all the arguments for the server call, and then put it into parameter list. And because you have an unspecified, you don't have any constraints with respect to data types. You're pretty open with respect to data types. Then you send an out request with your client ID and the parameter list, and then you basically wait for a reply and the client ID. And here, that means wait until response is available. And it also means you wait forever. And you wait as long as the response is not available. And you don't really need much of a synchronization or whatever. It's basically done by the tuple space. And if we look at the server, it's pretty much the same. You have a list of unspecified. You have an int client ID. Here, the data type is the client ID. You compute the results, and then you stick it out and take the client ID. And therefore, in that sense, the matching of request reply is done via the client ID. And while true, here the server basically blocks until it finds a request. So here, server blocks until request of any client is available. In that sense, it's rather simple to do client-server programming if you do that with a tuple space. And in that sense, it also could happen that a process or a client sends a request, and the server is not up yet. And then the server would come up later, and then it would basically answer the client request. But if we don't really want to wait forever, it would mean you have to do certain things with timeouts and things like that. That was actually with tuple space. That was an early implementation or an early implementation of the idea, and in the context of Java, it was basically a renewed implementation of it. But instead of tuples and Lisp like language like Lynda, they used Java, and that's then here Java Spaces, and it's based on the Lynda tuple concept, and instead of using tuples, we use Java objects, and we can basically look at it how that was done, and therefore in that sense we have now, instead of a tuple space, an object space, and the object space can be used for sharing and exchanging objects, and we can even use it for exchanging Java code. And let's look at it, how that is done. Here you have a Java space. We have here an processes. They can do a write. Another process can do a read, or another process can do a take. Read means you read the object and leave the object in the space. Take means you read the object and take it away from the Java space. What we have here is the processes are loosely coupled. So here processes are loosely coupled, and they don't even need an overlapping lifetime, and therefore we have something like an uncoupling of sending and receive. So here, uncoupling of sending and receive, because sending in that sense means write the operation or write the object, and receiving, it's basically taking and reading reading an object. And it provides a reliable and flexible protocol of exchanging information. It's implemented on top of the Genie technology, and we can look at the features of it. Certainly, the programming interface is rather simple, because you have just these three operations: take, write, read. Objects in the space are passive, and in that sense, processes cannot manipulate objects in the space. Therefore, in that sense, you can't invoke any methods on objects in the space. Therefore, it's not that it's possible to make an RMI call to an object in the space and execute certain methods. In order to execute a method on an object, it would mean you take the object out of the space, execute the method, and then put it back into the space. That's the only way to perform a method operation on an object in the space. Take it out, execute the method, and then put it back. Spaces are shared. Therefore, many remote objects can interact with it concurrently. And we can say the space handles details. So here, space handles concurrent access. And that's done in a similar way as it is done with databases. The database management system also handles concurrent accesses or manages it. Therefore, we don't really need, with a Java space, we don't need any semaphores, as you know from operating systems, where we have a shared memory space. And if we have multiple threads or processes accessing it, you need some kind of monitors, Java monitors, to handle concurrent access. You don't need that. It's done by the Java space. Spaces are persistent. Therefore, objects are stored as long as the space exists. And certainly, objects, when they are taken out by a process, then they are removed from the space. Or what we can also do, we can assign something like lease time, and lease time means existency time. And if the existency time expires, then basically the Java space eliminates the object from the space. You can, and if you don't assign lease time, then basically it would exist forever, except if another process removes the object. Its spaces are from the access are associative, and therefore we don't use object identifiers, or we don't use memory access. As you know it from object-oriented programming, usually they use an object name, or internally they use the memory ID to access an object. That you don't do. You use here an associative lookup, and therefore you use something like a template object. And how a template object looks like, that we will see later in with the data structures. It's transaction-oriented. In that sense, each access operation is atomic. Therefore, either the whole object is put into the space or it is not put into the space if there is something going wrong. Therefore, in that sense, you can't really have something like half an object is in a space, or you read half an object. That's not really happening. Either you can take the whole object out of the space, or you take none out of the space. And therefore, in that sense, every access operation is atomic. And you can also use it to exchange executable code. And that does not mean methods are executed in the code. So here, no method execution in space. And what happens is here, you have the executable code, put it into the space, another process takes it out and would generate something like an evaluate, and that evaluate leads to the execution of the Java code within the target environment. And therefore, in that sense, you can exchange executable code between processes, Java processes. And that's not really easy if you think of regular Java programming. Here, you have the possibility to do that. And let's look at the data structures, what kind of data structures we have. The most important one is this entry interface. And this entry interface, it's basically it's a marker. It's a marker which you can assign to objects. that they can be shared within the within this Java space, and it has no fields, as here, no fields, as no attributes, and methods. Therefore, in that sense, you just use it as a marker, and it extends serializable. And as we already can imagine, in the Java space, you don't store the object in the regular Java method or in a Java approach as an object. How you store an object in the space, it's basically in the serialized form. Also here, store objects. Also here, store objects in space in serialized form, and that also it gives you the idea why it is not possible to execute methods of objects in the space, because the object, you can't really access the methods, because the objects are only in a serialized form there. And in order to ship objects from one environment to another environment, we already know from RMI that we have to serialize the object and then ship it to the target environment. And then there, what we did, we deserialized it and basically put it into the memory of the target environment. Here, we serialize the object, and then it's stored in the serialized form. And that makes then also the reading rather fast, because the only thing what you do is you just take the object in a serialized form and ship it back. You don't really have the process of serializing, deserializing. It's serializing only once from the sending environment. And if we look here as an example here, the shared variable, that's now an example. It's basically an object which can be put into space. It implements the entry interface, and it has two attributes, name and value, and here it has the constructors. And one of the things is, what you now notice, well, this is the regular constructor. As you know from Java programming, you know here it has the parameters name to assign a value to the attribute name, and it has a parameter value to assign a value to the attribute value. That's as you know. But now it also has here a constructor which is empty. And that comes, if you think of to transmit, transmit object from space. How is that actually done? First, we transmit class definition. Transmit class definition. And class definition means you know we have these two attributes. But the problem is we don't really have the values. Therefore, we can't really already invoke this constructor, because we don't have the values for name and value here, and therefore we basically invoke this empty constructor to basically reserve space for the variable, and leave the attributes empty. And then we transmit, as we hear, transmit attribute, as we hear, attribute value pairs. And then we assign the values which were say or stored by the object in the space, and therefore every object which can be shared in that Java space basically has an empty constructor to transmit the objects back and forth. Here, this would be something like here in to create a new shared variable, just in your process, new shared variable, and counter and zero before to create an object, and then we could actually put it into the Java space. Also, another point is all fields are public. And we have no private fields. And because we have a sharing between processes, therefore the idea is you don't have any private information in the object. And it makes no sense to have private information. And what happens also when you put an object in the space, only the private fields or the private, only the public attributes are saved and moved into the Java space. All the private fields are basically thrown away. They are not transmitted into the space. And therefore, usually you use only public fields, because the private fields are basically never shared and they are thrown away. We have now, how do you access information? That's basically done with the space accessor. And here you have here the, you use get space from the space accessor field. If you leave this here empty, that's the name of the space. So here, name of space. And we can say certainly empty. So here, if empty, then use default. So here, use the default space, Java space. That's default space. But you can basically define any name of it. And you can register them, and either in with the Genie service, and then you can have a Genie lookup to get the information about the space, or you can even register it with RMI registry. And that's just to get the space. And now we can look at regular operations. And the important part of it's here, regular operations, read. Take means read and remove. And then we have write and notify. Let's look first at the write operation. The write operation, here you have the entry which you want to write into the space. You can put it under a transaction. Here with if you can have null, then the transaction consists only of the write operation. So here, transaction consists only of write operation, but you could even bundle multiple operations together into a single transaction. And you can specify also the lease time. And if you specify here lease forever, that means here it's stored indefinitely, except if it's removed by another process or possibly removed by the system administrator. But therefore, it does not really expire. And certainly you have a remote exceptions, for example, if the transaction is not valid or you have communication problems and things like that. And that's here the write operation. And next we can look at the read operation. And read operation, certainly you can have here take. Again, as a read, you take or read an object in the space, and the read just copies it and takes it out of the space. And again, you use a template. You have here something like a template object. For example, this would be our template object. As you remember, shared variable had two attributes. One attribute was the name. I mean, that was here the name. And the second attribute was value. No attribute value specified. And that means here we don't put a constraint on that value. It can be an arbitrary value, but it has to be an integer. Because the shared variable object expects on a second field, it expects an integer field. And therefore, in that sense here, space take basically here looks for an object which matches the template. And it has to have a field which matches counter. And then it has to have a second field which matches the data type of the second attribute. But the attribute here, the value, well, it can be an arbitrary value. And here the matching is done, again, associatively. And we can say here, this, the second field, is undefined. And you write it in a way, you specify here the template, and then you use that template as the appropriate matching rule. Max value, that means here in that sense, it's how long you wanna wait. So here, waiting time. And here the transaction, that's transaction. You can again put it in, if it's null, then basically the take is a single transaction. And take usually waits until appropriate things is available, or it would basically expire because the waiting time expires. And now we can certainly look at the end, at the matching rules. How do we look at the matching rules? First of all, you take the template class, and that you use the template class, and that has to be either matches the object class in the space, also here object class in space, or is a super class of the entry. Then you use the wildcard. It's basically the attributes which are not specified. So here, attributes not specified. They match the corresponding object field because there is no value constraint. But now we look at all the fields which are specified, and they have to be, the values have to be the same. The value in the template and the value in the entry object. And therefore, in that sense, that's how the matching is basically done. And atomicity, in that sense, when we look at it, that's at the end here. Here we create the template. We execute the operation take, and now we wait for an object which matches a template, and then the object is taken out of the space. And now we can modify it. For example, to the integer value, we can add 5, and then we can write it back in. And if you think of it, we don't need any semaphore. So here, no semaphore needed. No semaphore needed for object update. If you do that with a regular space, then basically it would mean you need some kind of a synchronization, like a Java monitor. Okay, I would stop here, and tomorrow I would quickly then talk about Notify, and then we would go back and finish the remaining parts of it. Thank you very much.